Given that some primary care physicians still don't know when to refer a patient for bariatric surgery, what criteria should you use to recommend a patient consider surgery?
Well, the criteria were actually established by the National Institutes of Health, NIH, back in 1991. And basically they consist of, number one, weight. So body mass index greater than 40 can be referred for weight loss surgery. If their body mass index is between 35 and 39.9, then typically they would need to have some medical problem related to the weight. So diabetes, sleep apnea, high blood pressure, some weight-related problem. They need to be able to understand how the surgery works, so they have to be cognizant enough to understand how it works and how they have to work after the surgery as well. They have to be able to participate in the aftercare portion of the program. They can't have any active substance abuse issues, so drug abuse is a key one, and they have to be medically fit, and that's a really kind of a catch term, but clearly if the surgery is riskier than living with the obesity, then that's a patient that probably is not going to go on to surgery. But honestly, I would rather a physician send them over and then let us sort them out. Let us figure out whether they're a good candidate or not a good candidate.
I think it's important that we not wait too long to refer as subspecialists and as primary care physicians. We need to be honest with ourselves as healthcare providers as well as our patients. Have we already made consistent efforts to lose weight? And if we've continued to make them year after year, maybe it's time to look for a higher intervention.
And I think Kim brings up a very good point. And the point is, we are waiting too long to refer patients. We know that the comorbidities, all the end-stage organ diseases, all the things that we have to use specialists on to fix a problem that's already broken, we can really change the statistics if we improve it earlier on.
And I think it's important to think that just because someone's eligible for surgery doesn't mean they're going to have surgery. And so I think at a particular body mass index above 35, it opens up a conversation. You know, for the stage that your disease is at, surgery probably offers you the best treatment right now. Now, and the patient may say, no thanks, I'm not interested in that, but it opens up that conversation.
Do patients need to have tried other options before surgery is appropriate? How long should someone try diet and exercise?
I think they should have a documented trial of lifestyle modification. But as we learn more about obesity, we learn that there's these genetic components that really cannot be denied. Leptin resistance, resistant, all of these sort of catchphrases we read about in the literature contribute to obesity. And if we can't start to look at obesity as a disease process rather than a lifestyle choice, then we'll never really get to the meat of the argument.
I have yet to see the patient who hasn't tried multiple things to try to lose the weight by the time they come to see me. On average, they've done at least 12 up to 20 different diet attempts prior to the time of coming for bariatric surgery. And I think the other thing that, at least in my mind, is that if we have a therapy that we know is only going to work 1% to 2% of the time, why do we want a patient to do another 6 months of a therapy we know is not going to work for them prior to offering them a therapy that may work for them?
And as a subspecialist, it's a cop-out to not be treating obesity. Whether you're an endocrinologist treating diabetes or a pulmonologist treating obstructive sleep apnea or a cardiologist treating heart disease, they all have a correlation with obesity. And I think sometimes we think, well, that's not our issue, or maybe we shouldn't address it. And the reality is that if someone comes to you with new onset diabetes, you're going to treat it. If someone comes to you with a positive stress test, you're going to investigate why they are having heart disease symptoms. And so you can't just put obesity on the back burner. And it really becomes an issue as a community. While we're just treating the symptoms, we're not treating the etiology. And so we need to be more, again, more progressive.
Well, given that bariatric surgery includes different procedures, this might be a good time to remind your colleagues about the different types of surgery, since there really have been a number of advances in the recent years.
Yeah, absolutely. Bariatric surgeries basically fall into three categories: restrictive procedures, malabsorptive procedures, and combination, so restrictive and malabsorptive. So when we talk about restrictive procedures, there's basically two restrictive procedures that are available now. One would be adjustable gastric banding. Adjustable gastric banding involves a belt-like structure that goes around the upper part of the stomach. That belt-like structure creates a small pouch up above the belt and then the normal stomach down below. That belt is connected by a tubing system to a port, very similar to a metaport that would sit underneath the skin, down on the muscle, so it can't be seen from the outside. And as patients come back, we'll start to adjust the band. And what that involves is a needle stick through the skin. We inject saline through that tubing system, and it blows up a balloon on the inside of that belt. And as it tightens down, it's much like an hourglass. We start to tighten down the neck of the hourglass. And so the food moves slower from the upper pouch to the normal stomach down below. So as we tighten it down, patients are able to eat less and less and still feel full or still feel satisfied. One type of restrictive procedure. The other type of restrictive procedure that is a newer procedure is called a vertical sleeve gastrectomy. With this operation, basically we're removing about 75 to 80% of the stomach and creating a long, narrow tube out of the stomach. And so patients are able to eat small amounts and feel full and feel satisfied again. Unlike the band, however, they don't have a foreign body inside of them that they have to come back and get adjusted quite as frequently. So those are the main restrictive procedures. The malabsorptive procedure is called a biliopancreatic diversion. And this is a very involved operation. It's partially removing part of the stomach. And then the main part of the operation, though, is bypassing the vast majority of the intestine. So we only leave about 100 centimeters of intestine left to absorb the foods that patients are eating. And because they only have 100 centimeters to absorb, they don't absorb as much, and so they'll start to lose weight. A combination procedure is a gastric bypass procedure. Gastric bypass procedure is still the most common operation done in the United States. Probably about 70 to 80% of the operations are still gastric bypass operations here in the U.S., and it's a combination operation. So we create this small gastric pouch from the upper part of the stomach that limits how much someone's able to eat. And then we bypass usually 100 to 150 centimeters from the intestinal stream so that they don't absorb as well from that segment of the intestine. So it's a combination operation. And with all of the operations, essentially what we're doing is we're bringing calories down. The equation never changes. It's calories in minus calories out equals weight loss or weight gain. And with all of our weight loss operations, what we're trying to do is limit the number of calories a patient's able to take in. And all of the operations work, they just work differently. And I think the probably one of the key points is that weight loss surgery has never been safer than what it is right now. I mean, the complications rates are lower than they've ever been.
What are the latest data on the effectiveness of bariatric surgery?
Part of that goes along with the procedure. And I think if we were going to sum it up, they're very effective. They're very effective for getting weight loss. With an adjustable gastric band, we typically see patients lose 50% of their excess weight. So in bariatric surgery, I don't know why we do this, but we do. Most people just talk about weight loss. Mm-hmm. In bariatric surgery, we talk about excess weight. The amount of weight that somebody loses, if you double that, that's excess weight. So 50% of excess weight loss with a band is common. So that's about 25% of their total body weight would come off. With a sleeve gastrectomy, it's about 60% of their excess weight. With a bypass, it's around 70% of their excess weight. And with a biliopancreatic diversion, it's about 80% of their excess weight. So they're very effective for weight loss. Remember, if we're trying to get medical weight loss, if we can get 10% weight loss, we're very excited. And as you know very well, if we can get 10% weight loss, we see significant improvement in overall health. Absolutely. Just with that amount of weight loss. And it's not just about weight. It's what that does to the medical problems that go along with the weight and what an incredible improvement we see in those medical problems that are related to the weight.
And we have a lot of young, overweight women who are concerned about pregnancy. And what do I do? And the studies have shown now that bariatric surgery in young women does not interfere with the outcome of their babies or their pregnancy. The only thing that we see is a higher rate of cesarean sections, which probably would have happened if they had remained obese to begin with. But we know that, importantly, they can have it done and have healthy babies. And that's really important to remember.
Dr. Skelding, it seems as some of the strongest data is in relation to diabetes. Is that correct?
Yes, we know that diabetics with obesity, if they have bariatric surgery, that about 88% of them will come off of their diabetic medications. We know that 60% will have an improvement in their diabetes overall and their overall health. So it's definitely very effective. And we call this epidemic diabesity because they're so interrelated. There really is very few patients who are significantly obese without diabetes. There is a biologic effect of the excess fat in the abdominal wall that makes insulin less sensitive.
A good number to keep in mind when you think about the improvement in health overall is 75%. It's pretty good. So in terms of diabetes resolution, high blood pressure, hyperlipidemia, sleep apnea, now the percentages will vary a little bit around there, but in general, it's 75% or above of all of those conditions go away. And that's an amazing number to me. I mean, it really is amazing. When you think, if we lined up 10 diabetics right here and we did weight loss surgery on them, 7 of them would no longer be diabetics. I mean, that's an amazing number. And it makes an incredible impact on health.
So is it the weight loss from bariatric surgery that makes it so effective for diabetes, or is there another mechanism at work?
That's a great question, and we don't know, is really the simple answer. There's a lot of work going into it right now, and one of the reasons why we don't think it's weight loss is you take a gastric bypass patient that's on an oral diabetic medicine. When they leave the hospital, they're off of it. I mean, and they get almost normal blood sugars very quickly after surgery, you know, within 48 hours, and that they don't lose any weight during that 48 hours. And so it may be different for the different surgeries as well, because we don't see that with adjustable gastric banding. We don't see that with sleeve gastrectomies. And there's a lot of work being done right now looking at the mechanism of why that is happening. But the answer is we don't know at this point.
That's why it's important to have an integrated program. It's important to have a program where bariatric surgery and the medical physicians are working together. That's vitally important, because one without the other will not work. We need to know which patient is right for which operation. We need to have aftercare. We need to have perioperative care that's addressing these issues and knowing how quickly these things can change. Because I think most physicians know that there'll be an improvement in diabetes, there'll be an improvement in hypertension, there'll be an improvement in hyperlipidemia. We just don't realize how quickly that happens. And so really needs to be a program that sort of looks at every aspect of these patients' lives and helps them, as Yolanda said, along that journey.